Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I'm your running host, Dean Thompson, back in the Upward Sports Studio after a week from New Jersey. But I'm here with somebody other than Mitchell, which we'll get to in just a minute. But we're going to go down memory lane today in our main story. We're going to talk and reflect on running highlights in our lives, and I think that should be really interesting. Lots of great stories, I'm sure, to be heard. We're also going to talk about how that relates to our spiritual walk as well. And then sometimes things just don't go as planned. We find ourselves in a bad position. So how should we respond to that? We're going to talk about that. And joining me this week is one of my most dear friends, a consistent running partner, a pretty good runner in his own right, but most importantly, a faithful man of God. Please welcome back, I think for the third time, Darren Lewis.
Thank you, Dean. It's a pleasure and an honor, as always, to be back. So look forward to sharing some great stories today with you.
Absolutely. And you've had your own non-running related challenges over the last year or so.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know how much you want to share on
yes,
that.
Yes, I have.
Yes, you have. You have.
I'm going to hold that for now.
Okay.
Because I'd like to share that a little bit later in the podcast. But
there's a good place for it to fit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, in case some of you have been wondering, I know that there are many out there who are praying for my dad. They knew that I was in New Jersey last week, and the reason I was there was because my dad was in the hospital with an incident. This is his third time in the last year and a half. We've been through it with him. When I left there, he was doing well. We had some really, really dicey days. We really thought we might lose him, and now it looks pretty hopeful. As if he just needs to get back some strength and be able to move around and do the things he needs to do. And that should happen within this next week. So
praise Jesus.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. Lots of prayers. I appreciate those of you who have reached out to me and been praying for him. Thank you so much for those prayers. I'm sure that's what got him through. So thank you. Our post of the week last week comes from Melissa Lagana and Sue Evans. Run for God week 12. We are ready for our 5K. Last night, our new runners shared the changes they have seen in themselves over the last 12 weeks, physically, mentally, and spiritually. Pounds lost, more energy, stronger minds, closer to Jesus, new friendships, plans to start attending church, and even be baptized. The transformation happening inside each of them is so beautiful. As I listened, I could feel myself filling with emotion and joy, seeing how God is working in every single one of their lives. Thank you, Lord, for this class, these friends, and for how you never give up on us. Help us always to go out and shine your light. This is the group that Mitchell and I went and ran with here a couple of months ago. This was the same group that we got a chance to hang out with for one session. And that was so much fun and such a good group. And I'm going to tell you what, Sue Evans, she's got more energy than Georgia Power. she is bouncing off the walls. And Melissa, she seems to be the steady influence in that group, while Sue is the hyperbolic one. So good for both of them. And what a great group.
I think it's just from the fact that they're all from Pennsylvania.
You think that's it?
Absolutely.
That's where you're from.
It is. Yes, exactly. So,
and I'm from right next door in New Jersey.
Yes, 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 yes. Overachievers.
Absolutely. Well, this was a pretty large group. I think there were 30 or 40 of them in this group. So it was a pretty good group. Lots of stories. We heard so many stories. And Melissa's story in particular, holy smokes, her story was just incredible. So now I do remember somebody in that group promising that they were going to write a story and send it in, but I don't want to say who it is, but I think her name starts with Melissa.
No pressure.
Yeah. So
no pressure, Melissa.
No, thank you, Melissa, for all of that. Our run of the week comes from Lydia Gunter. I love this. States for cross country. Super proud of my whole team. This is Lydia is a high school cross country runner from down there in Florida who has been posting a lot of the things that she does. And this is a post of her and her team on the stage there in Tallahassee, Florida, where they have the state championships. I have been on that very stage, as a matter of fact, because we have run the USATF National Club Nationals there in the past. And so
why does that not surprise me that you're up on the championship stage?
Well, I didn't win. I wish I had, but I didn't. I was third, but it was something. Anyway, it's good to see the young folks being involved with Upward Running as well. So good job, Lydia. Good job to your team. And keep it up. Keep shining his light. You do a good job there. I've always thought it's interesting that she calls it states. So we're going to states. But in Georgia, if you make it to state, you're going to state.
The state meet.
The state meet.
That's the same way it is in Pennsylvania
okay.
as well.
See, every state seems to be a little different. Well, I say it's one way or the other. I know in Michigan, I had an athlete from Michigan, and they called it states up there as well. So it's kind of hit or miss because you got two in the South that are different and two in the North that are different. It's interesting.
I've got nothing there.
Well, either one makes sense. The state meet makes sense because you're going to the state championship meet. But states make sense, too, because there are multiple classifications. So there's always more than one race. So there are multiple races. So you could call it states. I think either is okay.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, good job, Lydia. Our trivia question from last week. Who won either the men's or women's NCAA cross-country title last week? Of course, we're a couple of weeks out when this airs, but we'll talk more about this at the end of the podcast. But just for the teams that won, for those that are wondering from the question, North Carolina State won for the women. They were the number one team, and they came through and they won. BYU is closing on them hard. We'll talk about that. And then Oklahoma State won for the men and ran really well too. Individually, Doris Lemongole from Alabama was the women's winner. She's a Kenyan. And then Habtum Samuel, he's an Eritrean, won for the men on the men's side. Doris is now a two-time champion. She won it last year as well. So she's also a world-class steeplechaser, has run sub-9 for steeplechase. So she's an impressive athlete.
Well, who was on her heels?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that here at the end.
Yeah. So she's pretty impressive.
Yes, she is.
There was some controversy with the cross country championship as well.
People cutting the course.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think you should make a course uncuttable. I think that is on the meet director to make sure that you can't cut the course. I don't think there should be the opportunity, and especially in a big cross country race. If it's a small cross country race, you expect people just to follow the rules or whatever. But they made it easy for them to cut the course.
On that stage, you would think that they would have the proper controls in place.
You would. You absolutely would. And they didn't. And so, but the way they were cutting the course, they're going from closely cut grass to 3 inches or 4 inches of grass. It's not real comfortable. They're not cutting off a lot of distance. I don't think they got any advantage from it personally.
I saw some photos of it and it didn't, I didn't know if it just had to deal with the terrain, if it had rained and it was just more, the footing was more difficult on the main part of the course as opposed to.
Yeah. If that had been the case, then I would have a problem with it then. Because if you're gaining better footing, then you are gaining an advantage.
Right.
But as far as I could tell, it didn't look like they gained an advantage. So I didn't have a problem with it. I do think that the next time they have a race there on that course, they need to have barriers up that you can't, where you can't do that.
Right.
That's my
especially
opinion.
For a national championship.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back. And don't forget, we are looking for your story. I just mentioned that we're looking for Melissa's story. Well, we're looking for your story, too. So don't be shy. Go to upwardrunning.com and go to the section there where it says submit your story. It's pretty simple. Pretty simple. Or you can go directly there, upwardrunning.com/submit your story.
I bet you there's lots of stories.
Tons.
Each person probably has.
Yes. They're just waiting to be told and waiting to be heard. That's even more important that there are folks out there that need to hear your story.
It's critical.
Yep. All right. So I love this story. Experts weigh in on running debate sweeping the internet. What's tougher, running a sub-330 marathon or breaking 100 in a round of golf? Running and golf may both be beloved outdoor pastimes for men and women in their 30s, but that's where the similarities end. One sport is a race against the clock. The other doesn't even have one. Last week on X, running commentator Alex Prudhomme, I don't know if I said that right or not, posed a question to his followers, which ignited debate. Which is harder to achieve, a sub-330 marathon or breaking 100 strokes for an 18-hole round of golf? Both benchmarks, running 329.59 or shooting 99, are considered slightly above average. There's no doubt each requires a meaningful level of consistency, commitment, and training. But if a healthy 30-year-old with zero experience in either sport started running tomorrow, which milestone would they reach first? To find out, we asked two experts in their respective fields. Rory Linkletter is a 206 marathoner who has also broken 100 in golf. He says the answer is breaking 100 in golf. Although a sub-330 marathon probably requires more time to accomplish, it largely depends on the person. Bob Weeks, who is a golf analyst, said, "It's a great question. For me, I've broken 100 lots of times, but haven't managed a sub-330 run. I think it's easier to break 100, as you can continue to do it into your 50s, 60s, and beyond. My 93-year-old dad shot 88. Plus, you can play golf 100 times in a season, whereas it is difficult to find 100 marathons. I'd say both are achievements, since they each require a lot of dedication and training." This is an interesting question. I like it. Have you done either of these or both of these or
none of these?
So none of these.
None
okay.
of these.
All right.
So I think they're both difficult achievements.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would have to disagree with Alex in saying that these are just slightly above average goals for each sport because the statistics that I saw with running, it's
yeah, four and a half hours is the average.
Yeah. So, 15% have run less than 330?
Is that what it is?
I think it's somewhere around there.
Yeah. It is. You're right. And I don't know what the percentage is for the golf thing. I would think more than 15%.
I think so. But it's different skill sets.
Yeah, it's because totally different.
You're looking at running, which is strength and endurance. And I think the golf is more technique driven. There's a physical aspect to it, obviously, but it's almost like you're comparing apples and kumquats.
Right. But that's what makes the question so compelling.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I love it.
So,
according to the statistics I saw, I asked Perplexity. Perplexity says approximately 55% of golfers regularly break 100 in a round of golf. The statistics is based on data from the USGA and industry sources and reflects golfers who maintain a handicap and are more invested in their game. When including more casual, infrequent players, the percentage of those that break 100 regularly drops to closer to 40%. And then in running, approximately 15 to 18% of marathon runners complete the race in under 330. So, yeah, I mean, just based on percentages, it sure seems that the running feat is tougher. I don't know, just objectively. One of the interesting differences between these two sports, too, is that in golf, the course changes for the women. So the course is shorter for women than it mm-hmm. is for men. The tees are in a different place.
Right.
In running, it's the same course. So it to me, it should be easier for women in golf because the golf is handicapped for them, whereas in running, it's not. We're just saying 330 marathon. So I don't know if he meant just men or just women in this case. Maybe he meant just men. I didn't see the original question, but interesting for that reason too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also looked at some other activities too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That might compare. For those of you that don't know, my wife is a ballroom dancer. Incredible ballroom dancer. She's showcase quality. So I thought I'd dig into what it takes to become a competitive, maybe not an elite level ballroom dancer. But one of the things that I found out that the time that it takes to meet the bronze or silver level competitive level is roughly 2 to 3 years. So I think I was reading that in order to, if you took somebody from the couch to a marathon, realistically, that's, you know, a reasonably decent athlete, it's going to take 1 to 2 years. You might be able to do it a little quicker than that.
Depending on the person.
But roughly, so for ballroom dancing to get to a bronze or silver level competitor, it's going to take 2 to 3 years. And that's going to be about 6 hours per week if you're recreational. If you're to get to a super competitive level, it's going to be 15 to 20 hours per week. And the total hours is going to be like 1,000 hours of dance lessons with an instructor.
Yeah.
And for those of you that have watched Dancing with the Stars, the professionals, to get to that level, you're talking about 10,000 plus hours of practice with a lead, instructor lead.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it's incredible. And the difference between ballroom dancing too is there, the focus is on technical precision, posture, I can't even read my own handwriting. Coordination and being able to perform under pressure.
Yeah.
It's
a different kind of thing. Again, yeah. it's one of those out of the box, different. Yeah, that's an interesting fact. I like it. Well, good. Well, how about this week's story? Do you know what your favorite race is? Jerry Snyder poses that question in this week's story. This is called More Than One Answer. Bart Yasso, author of My Life on the Run, said, "Never limit where running can take you. I mean that geographically, spiritually, and of course, physically. I have been part of the running community over 40 years. Not long ago, a young friend new to the sport asked me what my favorite race was. I told him that question has more than one answer. Columbus, Ohio, my first marathon. As if 26.2 miles wasn't enough to conquer, it was bitter cold. How cold was it, you ask? It was so cold I had goosebumps on my arms and all the little geese were wearing sweaters. 40 years later, I'm still trying to thaw out. But I persevered and finished in 5 hours. Nothing can replace the I did it feeling you get when you finish your first marathon. The Athens Marathon. No, not Athens, Greece. Athens, Ohio. The year was 1992. The course included some steep hills. We're talking the kinds of hills mountain goats refuse to climb. There were 80 runners that day, and I beat all but 79 of them. I got sick, fell behind the pack, and had to do more walking than running. I refused to give up. When I finally got to the 26th mile marker, I pulled it out of the ground and ran with it like I was carrying the Olympic torch to the finish line. Marathons are supposed to be a test, and I gave myself a passing grade that day. Hollywood, California, about those show business talent scouts. They must have lost my number. No one has called me about presenting me with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But take a close look at my family tree. You'll discover that my cousin, Wallace Beery, who won an Academy Award in 1932 for his role in The Champ, has won. So for now, I'll have to be happy with that. I ran the Hollywood Half Marathon twice. It began and ended on Hollywood Boulevard. You could see the famous Hollywood sign on the mountain above. Lights, camera, action. Honolulu, Hawaii. A group of runners who helped raise money for the Leukemia Society and had the privilege of running 26.2 miles in the paradise of Hawaii. It's one of the five largest marathons in the United States. With 20,000 runners, the hardest part of the day was remembering everyone's name. The best part of this trip for me was our visit to Pearl Harbor and our tour of the Battleship Arizona Memorial. Washington, D.C., South Bend, Indiana, Chicago, Illinois, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Charleston, West Virginia, and Lancaster, Dayton, Toledo, Cleveland, London, and Logan, Ohio. If my opinion matters, every race is special. Most races benefit a worthy charity. You meet great people, and you have the chance to bring out the best in yourself and encourage others to do the same. It's a win for everyone. So please, lace up your shoes and join the fun.
Great, great story.
I love Jerry.
I've never met Jerry, but I think I'd really get along with Jerry. He has a great personality. You could see it come through in his writing.
Absolutely. Well, I just spent a couple of weeks in New Jersey in the house that I lived in when I was 4 years old. And so that house has been in our family for over 60 years. I learned how to ride a bicycle right out in front of this house. So that's how long this house has been around mm-hmm. and how much it's meant to us. And it's always fun to go back and reminisce. I'll walk through, you know, while I was in the house by myself, and I would walk through the house and just kind of reminisce mm-hmm. about things. And, you know, we lived in that house upstairs in this little bitty space. And I look at it now and I think, how did we live, four of us, in this little tiny space? Mm-hmm. But it's fun to go back and reminisce. And races are no exception. I don't know that I can come out with just one memory. You know, when I start to think about running memories, they just flood my brain.
I'm the same way. I was trying to, and things just kept coming out and coming out, coming out. One that might stick out to me was the very first race that I did was a 5K, and that was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, not mm-hmm. Ohio. But it was at a point where I had made a commitment to train for a marathon. And, I hadn't run in over 20 years, and I just had a bad physical, from the doctor. My, CBC numbers were not optimal. So I had made a commitment that I was going to make a lifestyle change. So I was basically doing a couch to marathon program in a year.
Oh, wow.
Might have been the inaugural.
Yeah, that was the first one.
For Upward Running and Run for God. But through this, I was in the process of renovating a house. I bought a new home, and I was gutting this house. And there was a couple of young guys that were in the kitchen doing the demo work. And I had just come in. I had taken a run throughout the town and then came into the house just to check. And one of the guys, he was Amish. And he started asking me about my run. And then he asked me if I was doing this run that was in Amish country mm-hmm. in Lancaster the next Saturday. And I told him I had signed up with a couple of people from work, and the conversation ended. Well, fast forward to that Saturday, I show up at the race, and I can't remember the guy's name. It was his last name was Stoltzfus. I do remember that.
Wow.
But he showed up to the race, and here everybody's. Most everybody else is there with a singlet on, with shorts on, with new running shoes. And this guy comes up and he's wearing blue jeans shirt and a suspender and suspenders and these old ratty shoes.
Oh my goodness.
And I saw him and I went up and chatted with him and wished him luck with the race. Well, wouldn't you know, he took off and he actually won the race.
Did he really?
Wearing blue jeans and
wow.
and suspenders.
Wow, that's crazy. That's one to remember.
It was for sure. Definitely one for the record books in my mind.
Oh my goodness!
And I think he finished under 18 minutes for a 5K.
Wow!
Which in my mind that was the first 5K I'd ever done. I was thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, man, that's pretty impressive mm-hmm. for sure. That's pretty cool. That's a good story.
Yeah.
2 Timothy 4:7 says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith." I love this passage because Paul is so confident in what he has done. You got to remember that Paul, as his ministry was moving along, Paul was more and more critical of himself. When he started writing his letters, he was a sinner, saved by grace, right? But by the time he writes his last letter, he is the worst of all sinners. And he realizes his own depravity in the time. And so to hear him when he gets to the end of his journey to say that I've done it, I've done all I can do, is really impressive because you know that he understands what the gravity of that is, right? And I think I want to be able to make that statement. You know, when I get to the end of my life, I want to be able to say, I did all I can do. I fought the good fight, sort of like running a race. You know, you don't want to finish a race. How many times have we all finished a race and you get through and you're like, I could have run faster.
I left a little bit in the tank.
Yep. Right. Yep. And it happens all the time. And
it usually never happens to me, just for the record. So,
I'm always critical of myself. And so I'm always like, I could have done a little better. I could have done a little better. And it happens with, you know, too much frequency. Anyway, you get through that. But what do? Well, you get ready for next week's race. You know, it's not a big deal. I'll make up for it next week by going hard next week or next month or whatever the next race is. You don't want to feel like you could have dug deeper at the end of a race, but you've got a chance to redeem yourself. Well, in life, we don't have another chance to redeem ourselves.
Right.
If we mess up this race, we just messed up this race. And I think it's really important for us to take a step back sometimes and realize we just got one shot at it. And we're going to make mistakes. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with making mistakes. But we need to give it all we got. And if we're not giving it all we got, then shame on us, right, for not doing it.
Well, I think it's important to realize, too, What we saw in Paul was his walk with God. The further along, the more convicted you become because you start to, more things get revealed to you. Mm-hmm. Your eyes start to open to more things as God reveals things to you. And then you realize, wow, what I once thought was okay really was not.
Yeah.
So I think it's just part of everybody's normal spiritual growth and development and walk with God.
That's a good point. Yep.
So
that's for sure.
This is also one of my favorite verses in the Bible too. For the reasons that you have mentioned, it also makes me think of Matthew 25:21, from the parable of the talents. His master replied, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Mm-hmm. You have been faithful in few things. I will put you in charge of many." So I just know when I get to the finish line and I get to the gates of heaven, those are the kind of words that I want to hear when I get there. So this 1 Timothy scripture is right there with that. So.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good parallel. One is how we view ourselves, and the other one is how somebody from the outside views us, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Psalm 119:32, "I run in the path of your commands, for you have broadened my understanding." The idea of running here, and the way that it puts it, "I run in the path of your commands," kind of shows like an eagerness and a joy in trying to pursue the path that God has for us, we don't run towards, we don't sprint towards, we don't get anxious about going towards things that we just tolerate, things that are okay. We do that towards things that we love and that we that are great and good. And I can't help but think about the video. I remember I saw a video recently of a father who was in the military, and he had come home. His son didn't know it. His son was at a baseball game throwing out the first pitch, and he throws out the first pitch in this baseball game, and the catcher takes his mask off, and it's his dad. He didn't realize he was throwing to his dad until he took the mask off.
Wow.
Which is a really cool way. And we see videos like this all the time, right?
Yeah.
We see where a military member comes home and then meets a family member. And the look on the face and the joy in their face when they see and they recognize who each other are is just really something special. That's the way we should be looking at God. That's what Psalm 119:32 is saying is You have made it so that I understand what it is I'm doing and who I'm doing it for, and I want to go at it as hard as I can. That to me, that's going at it with some kind of vigor, I think, is what I picture when I see this verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had it's been a while since I read this verse. So I went back and I read the entire chapter. And in this chapter, the psalmist writes an acrostic poem which emphasizes devotion to God's word. And when I read this particular passage, it encourages me to be more zealous in my pursuit of God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Specifically using the word run as opposed to walk in this passage.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, that's like the emphasis to do it with all that you have.
Mm-hmm.
This passage, it was particularly meaningful for me, given my own personal circumstances from this year,
yeah.
Actually the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So as you had alluded to early on in the podcast, I had gone through a cancer diagnosis earlier this year. Back in April, I had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and pretty much the entire year has been doing a lot of testing. I've had surgeries and treatments and recovery. And here I am 7 months later, and I'm cancer free.
Yep. And back to running.
And back to running.
Yeah.
So,
it's been a journey. But to me, what this is saying is just like, you know, I was just in New Jersey with my father. My father's in bad shape. We have good days. We have bad days. It's hard to keep up the vigor and intensity of wanting to go see him every day, not knowing what that day holds. Just like for you, when you get a cancer diagnosis, you don't know what that next day holds. And you tend to cherish it more, I think, a lot of times. But it also gets pretty weary. It's easy to get weary, isn't it?
It does.
Do you find yourself in those days where you're just like, I'm tired of fighting, God? You ever find that?
Yes. Yes and no.
Yeah.
And this is where the other half of this, this scripture verse, for you have broadened my understanding. So that had taken me to the point where as I passed through this chapter, I knew who was going to be with me every step of the way.
And you said it from the beginning because I was there and I heard it.
And I had complete peace,
mm-hmm.
every single step of the way, and confidence that I was going to get through this. And even if I hadn't gotten through this, I knew where I'm going to be in the end.
Amen.
So just being able to approach something like that in your life, knowing that God is going to be by your side, just gives you peace that transcends all understanding.
And it's awesome. And I think I told you at some point how impressed I was watching you go through that, because that's not always easy. But if you lean on these scriptures, like this particular scripture, it becomes doable. And I don't know how people that don't have God, I don't know how they get there. I don't know how they get through this stuff.
I I don't either.
Yeah.
It's painful.
Yeah.
It's painful to watch.
Romans 5:3-4. We rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that the suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. The Bible is probably the only place where the words rejoice in your sufferings are written. We don't think about good things usually when we're suffering, but I think about it like a hard track workout. You know, if we're out there and we're just pounding our brains into the track, you know, we're going to the well on this particular workout. We don't really rejoice in that. And yet we do at the same time, you know, because you can't dig that. You can't dig deep enough without a little bit of rejoicing, without really getting into it. And I think that's kind of what this is saying.
I think about hill repeats.
Same thing, in that matter. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a benefit, but getting there is utterly painful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the important thing to recognize, I think, in this case, because it goes on to talk about the string of things that happen when we rejoice in our sufferings, is that we have to rest. After that hill workout, you have to get some rest, because those muscles that you've torn down have got to be rebuilt. They get rebuilt when you rest. Well, in our spiritual lives, what happens is we go through these trials and things, but in those downtimes, while we're not going through those trials, we need to spend time in prayer, and we need to spend time in our Bible, drawing closer and gaining that strength, getting our spiritual life back in order so that when the battle comes, we're ready to go into battle, right?
Exactly. So this, I can so absolutely relate to this passage. To me, what Paul is telling us is that in the future, we will become. But until then, we must overcome.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's a little foreshadowing to what we're going to cover next. Yeah. But as I was reading this, that's really what stuck out to me. That we will experience difficulty.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of if we will, it's when we will.
That's right.
So, and that is something that is straight out of the Bible.
Right, James. It
is how we handle them that will shape our relationship with God and our confidence in the future. Our reward will truly be peace and joy in the end.
Amen.
Yes.
Amen.
Yes.
Question. Do you have a favorite running experience? So I was thinking about this, and I was trying to come up with, you know, if I think about this, I guess, you know, I won three state of Georgia high school championships when I was in high school. And those are pretty special, obviously. I didn't realize how special they were at the time, I don't think. You know, but looking back, they seem more special than they did when I was doing it. Because mm-hmm. I was just running at the time, and I was a kid. You know, that when I won the cross country state championship first, and that was special because I was the first one from our school to ever do that. Mm-hmm. And we had some pretty good runners there. So that was a really, really special thing. And then when the next one that I won was the mile, that was expected. Like, I was fifth the year before, and all four guys ahead of me were seniors. I was supposed to win that next year, as far as I was concerned. So it was expected. And then in the 2 mile, that was the strangest race, because we went out really, really slow. And my thing was, I didn't take the lead. I just wanted to run behind the leaders, and then I was going to win over the last half mile or so, last quarter mile or so. And we went out so slow that my time wasn't as good as I wanted it to be, because we went out so slow, but I scorched the last half mile because we were so slow. Mm-hmm. So it was a strange race. And there was a guy with me near the end that I didn't even know who he was, because he was from South Georgia. I was from North Georgia. But anyway, those three, what was interesting to me was that all three of those races were so different. You know, each one had a different context, and everything was different about each one of them.
Was there strategy behind that?
There was strategy behind each one of them. And in each case, I held that strategy and executed it just the way my coach had me do it. So Each worked out well.
Sometimes you have to trust the process, right?
That's right. That's right. And then I guess post high school, winning the Myrtle Beach Marathon was really a special thing. And I think it was special because I did what I was hoping to try to run 2:45 that day. And I wound up running 2:39. And I know for a lot of people, you think, well, 6 minutes, that's not a huge difference. At that pace, that is huge. That is a long, long way. And I really surprised myself that day. So I went out
shaving 15 seconds off your each mile pace.
Yeah, yeah,
roughly. That's huge going 26.2.
Yeah, yeah. So that one was pretty, that was pretty good. That's one of those races that I remember. Because I exceeded expectations, I think. So what about you?
Again, going back to what are your favorite running memories? My first marathon was huge. The New York Marathon was pretty special. Every time I've run a race at Run at the Mill, some of the earlier Run for God races here in Dalton, were pretty special.
Yeah.
And even I think about the time that I beat, a Heisman Trophy winner in a race was kind of special. And that was up in Nashville. That was a half marathon. It used to be the country music.
Yeah.
Half marathon.
Yeah.
And, that particular year, I don't know what happened, but I ended up running, I think it was about a 1:36.
Oh, wow.
Half marathon.
And who was the Heisman Trophy?
Eddie George.
All right.
Was actually, I thought that might be who it was. In the race. Yeah, he was the MC, and then he jumped into the race when they started it. And the only reason I realized I beat him was because I had gone across the finish line and they kind of looped you back around, and I'm looking, and I was at a point where I'm looking at the rest of the finishers coming across, and I see them coming across, and I'm like, yes.
That's okay. Pretty good. That's pretty sweet.
And as a boy that grew up in Pennsylvania and a Penn Stater.
Yeah.
To beat an Ohio State person was just icing on the cake. And I know I'm going to get a lot of grief for that comment.
We do have some Ohio State fans.
And I think I can tell you specific people that'll be commenting on that.
Yes,
too.
You will. But that's okay. It's all in.
It was, but it was actually a great race. I was hoping to have finished in like 1:45, and everything, all the stars aligned that day.
Yeah,
you know,
wow.
And you know, running that much faster. I mean, similar to what you did in Myrtle Beach.
That's even bigger.
Yeah, you don't you just sometimes everything just aligns.
Yep.
And it was a good race. And it was actually my best race.
It's so much fun when they do come together, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Do you have a goofy running experience that turned into a triumph? I guess there's a few that come to mind. I've talked about, well, I was in Sturgis, South Dakota one time, and I don't know about turning into a triumph, but I was running one morning. It was really quiet, and we were running, and I was just, it was really crisp. The air was really crisp. There was nothing going on in Sturgis, South Dakota that morning. And I go out for a run, and I'm just admiring the day, right? And I'm running on this path that runs down this stream. And as you run next to the stream, you take a left and you go across the stream and then follow the other side of the stream. There's a bridge across it. Well, as I ran onto the bridge, I looked to my right to kind of look down the stream, kind of catch a glance looking downstream as I'm crossing the bridge. When I turned back around, there was a deer who at the same time was thinking about crossing that bridge, came onto that bridge, and I almost ran into that deer, literally ran into him. I didn't miss him by more than 3 feet. I was that close to him. I could have reached out and touched him for sure. And He saw me about the same time I saw him. He must have been doing the same thing I was, you know, had his eyes in another location or something, and then all of a sudden saw me. And he took off back up that hill on the back side of the stream there. But that was a interesting morning, to say the least. And I remember when I was in high school.
Did you chase him?
No. I remember when I was in high school, we went down to Florida State University, and it was a track meet. And I went out for a cool down after this track meet, and I got lost. I was supposed to run 3 miles for this cool down, and I wound up running 10.
Sounds like something I would do.
I got to see all sorts of stuff that day and panic a little bit, not knowing if I could get back to where I came from. And then this
was before GPS days.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Way before GPS days. Yeah. And this one, it wasn't me, but, a team I was coaching. I had somebody, we were going to run the distance medley relay. The distance medley relay has 4 legs and each one's a different distance, 400, 800, 1200, 1600 mm-hmm. meters. And I had everything lined up before the meet started. This was who was going to run each race. Well, the lady who was supposed to run the 800 meters got sick. She couldn't run. Well, I didn't want the rest of the team not to be able to run, so I needed to find somebody who was willing to kind of double up and run this 800 meter legs of the distance medley relay. So I found a girl that was willing to do it, and it was really nice that she was willing to. She had already changed out of her running clothes, but she changed back into her running clothes. She got back on the track. Unbeknownst to me, back when I ran the distance medley relay in high school, for whatever reason, I didn't know this had changed. We ran the 800 meter leg first. And so I had her on the track first because the 800 meter leg, to my mind, was first. It was the first DMR I'd run as a coach in college. Well, turns out after the gun went off, we found out that the 1200 meter leg was first. So this poor girl who had signed up for an 800 meter leg now suddenly had to run another two. It was indoors. Had to run another 2 laps more than she thought. And so we're having to communicate this while she's running her leg. And she was a trooper. She hung in there and she did it. And then the girl that was supposed to run the 1200 leg obviously had to run 800 instead. Anyway, it was just a big debacle. All my fault because I didn't understand up front. But that was a crazy day that day.
That's great.
What about you? You have any goofy ones?
Too numerous to count, but a couple that come to mind. This was a couple of years ago, and I was out on a training run. It was the middle of the summer. So in the summers in Southeast Tennessee are pretty warm. So after work, I just stripped down and just went running without a shirt. And went out, ran about 6 or 7 miles in a local greenway that I've run 100 times. And I finished my run, and I'm in the parking lot, and there's this pavilion that's right next to where my car is parked. So I'm at my car, and I've got my towel. I'm trying to towel down and dry off a little bit before I jump in the car. And this gentleman approaches me, and he asked me, I have a strange request from you, but do you mind being a witness to a wedding?
And here you are shirtless.
And I'm shirtless. And I turn around and there's this young couple that's standing up in the pavilion, and he was the officiant to the wedding. He said, we need to have an official witness to this wedding, if you don't mind. And I'm like, well, let me just kind of towel off here and put a shirt on, and I would be honored to do that. So I walked up and I watched this young couple, they were like 18 years old, exchange their wedding vows. As sweat's dripping off of me.
That's certainly non-standard.
And I got to witness and sign off that I was a true witness to this, their matrimonial vows. So That was actually kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
And then the other one, many of the people on this podcast probably have heard this, but the time I had run the New York City Marathon was I was clipping along at about an 8 minute mile pace. And I was, that was my threshold. I wanted to finish with under an 8 hour pace until I hit mile 22. And at that point, I hit the proverbial wall.
Right.
And I hit it hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to the point, and then for those of you that are not familiar with the New York City Marathon, it runs through all five boroughs. So you start out in Staten Island, you cross over the Verrazano Bridge, you enter into Brooklyn, and then Queens, and then you go into Manhattan, into the Bronx, and then back into Manhattan again. So I'm at the section where I'm back in Manhattan and just hitting Central Park. And things started to get a little hazy. I'm looking at like street signs and people, and they're kind of getting fuzzy. And I was just trying to get as much nutrition and water and electrolytes into my system at the time. And all of a sudden, I see out of the corner of my eye, there's this guy that's passing me, and he's wearing a gorilla suit. And not only is it a gorilla suit, but it's a pink gorilla suit. So
got beat this, by a pink
this
gorilla.
Had gone on for a few minutes until I started to get the sense, and then I was within like a mile and a half of the finish line, and he was still like maybe 50 yards in front of me. And I start thinking about finish line and finish line photos, and I'm not wanting to have a finish line photo with a pink gorilla in it while I'm finishing the New York City Marathon. So I, at that point, I got this extra energy, and I vowed I was not even going to let this pink gorilla beat me. So I pushed through. I passed the gorilla before we entered back into the final stretch of the marathon, and I beat the pink gorilla.
Oh, good. And he wasn't in your picture.
He was not in my picture. All right. It was a 408 marathon, which was a little disappointing. It was not what I wanted to, but nonetheless, New York City is a tough course.
Yeah.
If you've not done it before.
Yep.
But it was definitely a goofy memory that ended up pretty well. So
that's good stuff. I love it. How can you encourage a non-runner to start running and join the fun? I've been doing that for a lot of years. All we can do, I think, is be a good ambassador for the sport and make it look attractive. Be joyful ourselves, right? You know, the old proverb, the worst day of running is better than the best day of name it,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly.
If we can do that, then I think that encourages people. And then you got practical reasons. You got all the health benefits of doing what we do. That's a for sure way to encourage people to do it. You know, lower blood pressure is a good reason for somebody, or lower weight. That goes to being physical, you know, our physical being. Mm-hmm. You become stronger. As you get older, that becomes more important. I think everybody that's 60 years old should be doing, absolutely needs to be doing some form of exercise. Because you need to do it. You need to keep those muscles up. And then I really believe that running helps me spiritually, because I need the alone time with God. And I think it's helpful to me spiritually as well. And so there's just all sorts of reasons that we can give to people. And then if in the middle of all that, we are showing the joy on our face as we do it, then I think that encourages people a lot.
Excellent points. Only things I might add to that, you know, lock and stock with the spiritual benefits of it. To me, it's a stress reliever.
Yeah.
You know, I work in a pretty high stress job, and the thing I look forward to when the day's over, besides going home to my beautiful wife, is getting that run in, because that run helps me to refocus myself.
Yeah.
And it's primarily because it's time that I get to spend with God.
Yeah.
But it does, it serves as a pressure relief valve. I've also read that running boosts your immunity up to 40%. And that's
long as you don't go too far.
Right. Exactly. It builds discipline. It builds confidence. Running is accessible and relatively affordable compared to other fitness options when you look at it.
Very true.
And I like to think in terms of longevity. So I've shared with you before, one of my goals in life is I want to live to 100. Mm-hmm. And I also want to be able to do a 5K when I'm 100. So it's quality of life too.
Right.
So I always, every decision that I make, I make with that goal in mind. When I'm rehabbing, I don't try to rush back and get into it too quick, because I realize I can increase the likelihood of an injury.
Yeah.
So I try to take it slow and easy and just realize, just listen to my body. But I always look at health equals wealth.
Mm, yeah.
So I don't know of a better exercise that can get you healthier than running, in my humble opinion.
Totally agree.
It can be terribly hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Running can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join Upward Running today and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to upwardrunning.com and sign up today.
All right, we're back. This comes from Study Finds. Should we eat dinner earlier in winter? Why timing might matter more than you think. Once the clocks have gone back and darkness falls before many of us even leave work, the rhythms of winter can feel heavier. Shorter days, darker evenings, and often later dinners. But shifting when we eat during the winter could make these months a little easier on our bodies and minds. Our bodies operate on circadian rhythms, an internal 24-hour clock that regulates sleep, metabolism, digestion, and hormone cycles. These rhythms are naturally synchronized with light and dark. So when daylight fades earlier, our metabolism also begins to wind down. This connection between metabolism and daylight may help explain why a growing body of research from the field of chrononutrition suggests that
when we eat,
maybe nearly as important as what we eat. And so they explored the timing and how that interacts with our body. For instance, one study found that healthy adults who ate dinner at 10 p.m. experienced 20% higher blood sugar peaks and burned 10% less fat compared to those who ate dinner at 6 p.m. That was despite both groups eating identical meals and having similar bedtimes. And then broader analysis supports the same trends, with a meta-analysis of 29 trials reporting that earlier eating windows, fewer meals, eating the bulk of one's calories earlier in the day were linked to greater weight loss and improved metabolic markers such as better blood pressure and lower blood sugar and cholesterol levels. Other research links consistent late night eating, especially close to bedtime, with poor health outcomes and greater risk of obesity and metabolic disorders such as type 2 diabetes. Earlier dinners may better align with the body's natural metabolic rhythms, particularly when the last meal occurs well before the body enters its rest phase. This might explain why eating earlier has health benefits. In winter, especially in the northern latitudes, shorter days and longer nights can disrupt circadian rhythms. Reduced sunlight can lower serotonin levels, contributing to lower mood or seasonal affective disorder, which is also known as SAD. Mm-hmm. When paired with longer evenings indoors, it's common for people to snack more often or delay eating dinner until later at night. While light and dark have the biggest influence on circadian rhythms, food intake, stress, physical activity, and temperatures also affect them. So should you eat dinner earlier in the winter? For some people, yes, at least a little earlier. Then there are three main reasons why. First, metabolic alignment. Eating when your metabolism is still active supports better blood sugar control, energy use, and fat burning. Second, leaving a few hours between dinner and bedtime allows digestion to wind down before sleep, which helps with sleep quality and recovery. And then third, mood and circadian rhythms. A consistent eating window and earlier dinner can help anchor daily routines. But here's the caveat. This isn't one-size-fits-all solution. Many different factors, such as how active you are, if you have any chronic conditions, and your schedule need to be taken into account. For example, elite athletes in the evening may need a later meal to support their performance and recovery, but someone less active might benefit from an earlier, lighter dinner. So rather than rigid rules, think of meal timing as a flexible tool in your nutrition toolkit. The real focus should be on eating with intent. Some other mealtime tips, finish dinner earlier, ideally between 5:30 to 7. Front load your calories by making breakfast and lunch more substantial. Plan around activities. So if you exercise late, have your main meal earlier. Keeping a consistent eating window, trying to finish by eating before 8. Reflecting and adjusting by noting how meal timing affects your energy, sleep quality, and mood. Check on that. And then staying flexible by remembering perfection isn't required. That's really important. As winter settles in, paying attention to when you eat may be just as important as what you eat. But the key is intentionality, making choices that serve your health, not rigid rules that create stress. The healthiest rhythm is the one that harmonizes with both your biology and your lifestyle. Man, I didn't realize there were people that eat at 9 p.m. I couldn't do that. There's no way I could eat. No. I could eat at 9 p.m.
No. And as I was looking this over and listening, I'm an early eater.
Yeah.
And with some of the health challenges I've had over the last couple of years, it's my doctor has said you really need to make sure you're eating and having your last meal 2 to 3 hours before you plan to go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have a firm cutoff of not eating anything after 7 o'clock.
Is that what it is? Okay.
It is.
I usually eat around 6. Mm-hmm. In the summertime, I may eat a little bit later just because I'm outside in the yard working or doing something and I just get busy and, you know, I don't eat until I come in. But for the most part, 6 p.m. is kind of our target at our house.
But I've never really thought about the one point that you mentioned about having your heavier meals as breakfast and lunch and then having lighter meal for dinner.
Yeah, that makes sense in a wintertime where it does make sense that your circadian rhythm changes in the wintertime because it gets light or it gets dark earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Never thought about it before until I saw this article. Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, this is a story I wrote for our first devotions book years ago, but it is as true today as it has ever been. It's called Be an Overcomer. I remember getting spiked during a cross-country race in high school and trying to decide whether or not to stop as I watched my white shoe turn red and brown over the ensuing 3 miles. On a steep descent in the first half mile of the race, I lost footing and slid into the runner ahead of me. It was a downpour, and the mud on the course made it difficult to remain upright. But a good fighter doesn't stop until he's knocked out, or the referee stops the fight. I had a good race and was happy that I didn't give up, even though my body was telling me to stop. The running world is rife with stories of overcoming obstacles. There are other times when those obstacles overcome us and things go in a different direction. That leads us to a different kind of situation to overcome. Gabrielle Anderson was an Olympic marathoner from Switzerland who took part in the first ever women's marathon to be run at the Olympics in Los Angeles in 1984. The heat of the LA summer took a toll on her during the race, and she entered the stadium with obvious heat exhaustion as she staggered onto the track. Officials were quick to come to her aid, but she waved them off, determined to finish the historic race. The officials saw that she was still perspiring, which meant that she had not reached heat stroke level, and allowed her to continue around the track. It took It took the 233 marathoner nearly 6 minutes to complete that last lap as she staggered and occasionally stopped and held her head in her hands. She finished that race in dramatic fashion to the cheers of the entire stadium. She was an overcomer. At the 1996 Olympic Trials Marathon, Bob Kampanen made a move into the lead at 22 miles. With a 20-yard lead over his nearest rival, he became sick and began to vomit, but never broke his stride. Over the ensuing 2 miles, he vomited several more times, but continued to press the pace and won the race. Although somewhat disgusting, it was an inspirational finish. Bob Kampanen was an overcomer. Sometimes adversity leaves a different kind of mark. The 1984 Olympic 3,000-meter race was billed as a duel between Mary Decker Slaney, world champion, and Zola Budd, the running for Great Britain. Neither of these two great runners had spent much time running in a pack because they were usually so far out in front. But this race was very competitive, and they found themselves in a pack of four runners pulling away from the rest of the field. Just before the 5-minute mark of the race, Zola Budd went to the front of the pack. As she went around the curve, she pulled over closer to the inside and made contact with Slaney. There was a break in stride, and they became off balance. Contact was made a second time, and Slaney went down into the infield, injuring her hip and unable to continue. She had dreamed of winning an Olympic gold medal, but it was lost at that point. It left her with a different situation to overcome, the disappointment that comes from not being able to reach a goal. Sometimes we have no real choice but to become overcomers. Overcoming obstacles are part of life. Sometimes we are able to hurdle them as they come towards us, like Bob Kampanen, and sometimes we have to climb a mountain to get there, like Mary Decker Slaney. I often find myself working to overcome difficult mental obstacles while running. I think it works well, but it's only part of the journey. The real healing comes when I give it to God for Him to work out. It is easy to think that God is not concerned with the things as seemingly insignificant as our running, but nothing could be further from the truth. God wants to be an intimate part of all that we do. It's a difficult thing for a competitor to let go of control and hand it over to Him. But when we do, it makes all the difference. You know, we really have two directions we can go in when things don't go well, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can give up or we can fight on. It's that simple.
Yep. Agree.
Yeah. And sometimes that story is, you know, the thing where you overcome, like Bob Kampanen overcame his situation, that sickness. And then sometimes, you know, like Mary Decker, she had to overcome a whole different thing, a much, much longer term thing with this injury that she had to. And you know what? Mary Decker Slaney never won an Olympic medal. And it was a shame because she was probably the best middle distance runner of her time. But she missed the 1980 Olympics because of the boycott. And then she missed the 1984 Olympics, or didn't she got injured in the 84 Olympics. And so those were her peak years. She missed those two opportunities. And you know, you got the choice. Do you just give up or do you keep going? You know, I remember a race back again. I don't know why I'm talking about high school so much today. But back in high school, I was running a race. It was my first cross country race ever. And with, I don't know, half mile left to go or so, I went into the lead. It was a JV race. I went into the lead to lead the race. I was up by, I don't know, 50 meters or so. And they pointed me in a direction. Well, I run up this hill in the direction they pointed me. And as I'm getting toward the top of the hill, my teammate, who was in second, yells at me, "Hey, Dean, this way." I had gone the wrong way. And I had to turn around. And I had a choice at that moment. Do I try to make up the 100 yards I just lost and try to catch him before the finish line? Or do I just give up and just go ahead and finish second? And of course, you know what I did. Actually, he wound up beating me by less than a tenth of a second. I almost caught him right at the line and didn't quite get there, but I was really close. But, you know, we just have those times, and you have in moments like that, you have a split second to make a decision.
Exactly.
And I had to make that decision right then, or it was going to be too late. And fortunately, I think I made the right decision, even though I didn't win. I still think I made the right decision. And so, But oftentimes people fall into one of two categories, right? We hear about all the time, fight or flight. We either have people who their natural inclination is to fight back and try to overcome that thing, or it is to run away from or give up on. And we really, as Christians, we should be fighters. We should be fighters, I think. Now, some people's personality is different than others, and they have to really, really work at it. But I feel like if we're filled with the Holy Spirit, I feel like giving up is just not an option. I don't know. That's the way I feel. What do you think?
No, I wholeheartedly agree. A third category might be like the deer staring in the headlights too.
Yeah.
Because you have fight, you have flight, and then you have people that just get paralyzed.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. But I think if you're in that category, it's closer to the flight syndrome because you're not taking action.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the flight is you're running away from something.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that it's a lot harder in Mary Decker Slaney's situation, where in your situation, where what you just went through, because you have to wake up every day and go, I'm still fighting. In this race that I was talking about, that I described, I had a chance to make a decision one time and then act on that, and then it was over, right? But when you get an injury, let's say, and you've got to take a month off, you know it's going to be hard to get back, and you have to wake up every day with the determination to, and so it's a lot harder when you went to overcome something when it's a longer term thing.
But wholeheartedly agree. You know, my comeback after my cancer surgery is taking much longer than I anticipated. Mm-hmm. And my doctor said it very well could take 6 months until you are back to performing at the level you were prior to surgery.
Yeah.
So that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah,
sure it is. But I also approach each day with that God has given me a gift, that I'm still here, and he and I'm allowed to run.
Yeah.
So that right in there is the blessing. I may not be performing at the level I was, but I'm still getting to enjoy a sport that I love dearly.
What is it that Madonna Barker says? Every run is a gift.
Every run is a gift.
Yeah, I love that.
There's a lot of wisdom there. Thank you, Madonna.
Yep. And sometimes you can take those tragic things and they can become special. You know, I've shared on here a number of times the idea of me missing that one day of running and how I went from, I don't want to rehash the story again, but I went from, oh my gosh, I just blew it. Like, I am such a bonehead. I just blew it, to, okay, God, what are you trying to tell me? And then being one of the most liberating, best feelings I've ever had. God can do that. He can take us from, I really blew it, to, oh no, this was a good thing. Just in the blink of an eye. And it's amazing what God can do. If we'll just have that perspective. If we'll stop long enough to ask, okay, God, why you got me here? Sometimes that's all we ought to ask, right?
He can make beauty from ashes, can't he?
Amen.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word, as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share helpful tips each day along with encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, it is just a click away to get started today.
Every week we share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. And this week, I thought this would be appropriate time to say it's something you can share with friends. I know there's a lot of things that you can share with friends. But, you know, we always say those who suffer together form a special bond. And that bond brings friends. You take that and you take this friendship that you've already got, and bam, I mean, it just makes it really, really powerful, right? I thought this would be a good day to share that of all days.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think about conversations that I have with friends. There's conversations when you're at the dinner table or you're commuting somewhere. But when you're running with somebody and you're sharing, yeah, I've found over the years that running just has this tendency to bring out some more intimate things that you wouldn't necessarily share with others. And those friendships become even closer,
yeah,
because of that intimacy.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Never thought about that.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, you had one other overcomer that we didn't get to in that last section. So share with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when I think about overcomers, and you gave some excellent examples. I had a couple that came to mind, and in the track and field world, Wilma Rudolph, from back in the 1960s.
Yep.
She had overcome polio, and had won 3 gold medals, after that.
That was a long road for her.
No kidding.
Yep.
And think about, you know, having to overcome, you know, a disease like that to be able to perform at that level. I mean, just not anybody is going to be able to get an Olympic gold medal.
Yeah.
I mean, we just heard a story about Mary Decker Slaney.
Yep.
Who is the top runner in her field, and, you know, stuff happens,
yep,
you know, that can knock you out in an instant.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Michael Jordan, too, is another,
oh, yeah,
another example. He was actually cut from his high school basketball team.
That is true.
And then I think we all know who Michael Jordan is, and then his yeah, resume.
He came back.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. So. Yeah, those are good ones, mm-hmm, good examples. Well, one of the few things that went well for me while I was in New Jersey was I did take the opportunity to watch the NCAA cross country championships. That's one of my favorite events to watch every year. It is always, there's always surprises at the NCAA championships. And this year, of course, there were surprises, and it was so much, it's so competitive. And Mitchell and I were talking last week about how, you know, how they have in football, they've got the first down line, the line of scrimmage, and they've got all this fancy technology they use to enhance the game and make it better. What if they did the same thing for running? Why not? Why can't they have GPS locators on each athlete and give you real-time scores in a cross-country race? You should be able to see the score as it happens. You know what I mean? They do it in NASCAR. The NASCAR, you know, all those cars, they have GPS on them, and you know exactly where everybody is and exactly how far down they are every second of the race. And wouldn't that make it interesting to watch? Because, for example, in this race, the North Carolina State women, they were out front. They went out well. They got out in front, and they were way out in front. But at the end of the race, one of their better runners was fading hard, and BYU was coming on strong. It would have been fun to watch those scores get closer and closer and closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and watch it and think, oh my gosh, oh my God, are they going to catch them? Are they going to catch them? Are they going to catch them? And they didn't. But if that race would have been another K longer, they would have.
It would add a level of excitement to,
yeah,
to watching, you know, instead of just watching a bunch of runners, you know, fight for position and, you know, you actually have some analytics that you can track and,
yeah,
and add a different element of excitement to the race.
Yeah, that's always fun to watch. And this was a pretty close race. I love to watch these races when they're close, when they get through and you're like, who won? A few years ago, Oklahoma State and Northern Arizona men, they finished, and in my mind, I'm counting up the points in my head, and I'm like, I think they're tied. And then I'm thinking, okay, how do they break the tie in college cross country? And it turns out Northern Arizona won it on a tiebreaker. They actually did tie in the score.
Really?
And they won it on a tiebreaker.
What is the tiebreaker?
They take the top five runners and they average out those. So whoever won in head-to-head, number one runners together, number two runners together, number three runners together, whoever wins the most of those matchups between mm-hmm. those two teams wins.
Okay.
Which is different than like in high school, they go to the number six runner. So I don't know why they don't go to the number six runner in college, but that seems like it makes sense to me because then you got a bigger reason for number six to run well, you know? But anyway, that was a really, really exciting race. And so in the men's race this year, Oklahoma State just pretty much dominated. New Mexico was closing on them in the end because one of Oklahoma State's best runners, I don't know what happened to him, but I saw him finishing. He finished like 180 something because at the end he could barely walk. I mean, he actually fell down before the finish line and got up and kind of walked across the finish line because he was spent. He was just completely spent. He's a middle distance guy who was running a distance race mm-hmm. and he was done at 8K and had to run 10K. So he was fading hard. So their number six runner had to make up some ground in that last mile. In order for them to, if he had not done that, he made up like 40 spots in that last mile. And if he hadn't, New Mexico would have beaten them. So again, you never know what's going to happen in cross. Last year, Oklahoma State finished eighth. Year before last, they dominated the meet. Last year, they finished eighth, and this year they're back to dominating. You just never know what's going to happen in NCAA cross country. It's so much fun to watch. Individually, you mentioned earlier about the women's race, and I mentioned who won that Doris Lemmingole won the women's race. But Jane Henningren is a freshman, a true freshman at BYU, and there was a thought that she might be the favorite going in the race, mostly because we didn't know what kind of shape Doris was in, and she's had a really, really long year with the world championships and all. But Jane was running really, really well. She hadn't lost a race yet, and she came in probably the favorites. But for Jane to win, she would have had to have done something that hasn't been done since the mid-80s. So a freshman woman hasn't won NCAA cross country since I think it was 85. But Jane had a good shot at it, and she gave it her best. But Doris pulled away from her over the last half mile, wound up winning by 13 seconds.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't
Yeah.
quite as close as you would have thought.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, Jane can't be too upset losing to a world-class athlete like Doris Lemmingole. Mm-hmm. So, and in the men's race, an American had won the men's race 6 years in a row, which is crazy because, you know, there's so many good Kenyans in this race usually. But we had won, you know, an American male had won 6 years in a row. But this year, an Eritrean won, Habtum Samuel from New Mexico. The move he made, there was one little hill on this course. And at the top of that hill, it's like he looked like he was shot out of a cannon. Just all of a sudden, he just sprinted and took off a mile from the finish, 1K from the finish. It was over a half mile from the finish. And I mean, he just pulled away from him and gapped everybody by 30 meters in like just a few seconds. It was crazy to watch. But it was great.
And he had another gear.
He did. But Rocky Hansen went with him, tried to go with him, tried to hang as close as he could. And every time he tried to close it, Samuel would look back and see him and he'd pull away a little bit again. So, but Rocky Hansen, an American, finished just a few seconds back. Unfortunately, Rocky Hansen was one of the few Americans. I think only five or six of the top 30 were actually Americans
wow.
in NCAAs, which is that's much heavier foreign influence than usual in that race. But it is what it is, and all these it's good to see these races run. Fun fact about Rocky Hansen: Rocky Hansen was coached by a guy named Randy Ashley in high school. Randy Ashley was the number two or three, alternated between two and three runner on my high school cross country team when I was a senior.
Wow.
Yep. He was actually a state champion himself at the same school I was the year after I was a state champion. So Randy was his coach during high school. And that was interesting. So lots of fun in the NCAA. I'm sure you, did you catch the NCAA?
I did not. I'm guilty.
No, it's good. It's good. I get it. It's not advertised. You don't even know what's going on. If you don't, if you're not paying, if you're not looking for it, you'd never know what was going on. It's not like all the other NCAA sports.
Oh, I knew it was going on.
Did you? You just had other things to do.
I had some other priorities, Wendy.
Yeah, well, it was fun. Well, how about a trivia question for this week? This week, let's keep it with the NCAA cross country theme.
So before we jump onto the trivia, so you had mentioned why running and walking is awesome. So you run everywhere that you go.
Yeah.
So when you get away, has there ever been a place that you've discovered something when you're running that you otherwise may not have?
All sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Almost every place I go,
yeah,
I discover something that I wouldn't have seen otherwise. Yeah. Because you wind up running in places that, you know, I mean, just a good example, this past week when I was in New Jersey, I discovered a park up there that I never knew existed, not far from where basically, you know, my parents and I grew up. And I never knew it was there.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, yeah. but a really, really nice place to run on trails. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I travel quite a bit on business.
Did you send me a picture? You sent me a picture.
Yeah, from
Notre Dame.
Yeah, maybe a month or two ago where I had to travel to South Bend. And I take my running shoes everywhere I go.
Yeah.
And I stumbled across these trails that led me right onto the Notre Dame campus. So I got to see, you know, all the famous sites there. And I had gone there on the first day and ran around campus. And then, I was back at the hotel, having dinner, and I was looking at a map. And then there was a landmark. They said that the third most famous landmark was this mural of Touchdown Jesus.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, I've got to find this. It just needed to be Jesus. I mean, I'm always looking for Jesus everywhere I go. So I figured out where it was, and the next day I went for a run and I found this mural. It was, wow, was it impressive. It's on the back side of the library, and it's I forget what the size of it is, 156 foot high, but it was all made of individual pieces of mosaic that this artist had been commissioned to make back in the 1960s. But it's Jesus with his arms held out.
Yeah.
Held above his head like this.
Yeah.
And then you see all of the prophets and the apostles and all that in the mural as well. And it's positioned on the north end of the football stadium. So if you're inside the football stadium and you look through the goalpost, you can see Touchdown Jesus in the background. Very impressive mural, though.
And that's pretty cool.
You know, and everywhere I go, I've everywhere I'm on a business trip, and I get to see places that you would not see if you're just driving around in a rental car or in an Uber or a taxi or whatever.
For sure.
So
that has been my reason in the past. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. Good stuff. Our trivia question for this week: which school has won the most NCAA cross country titles? And if you know the answer to that, or maybe you've Googled the answer to that,
you can— No Googling this week.
Send that to dean@upward.org and you will win $20 off in the store. Yeah, this might surprise you what school this is. So check that out. Our motivational thought of the week is this. It comes from that famous person, Unknown. I run because exhausting myself is somehow the most relaxing part of my day. I know I often think that, you know, there's days where you don't even feel like it, but then you get out there and you run and it's like, oh my goodness, this is what I needed, even though you're tired. And that's, of course,
only runners have that kind of mentality.
Yeah. Of course, I've only missed one day in the last 14 years, so I don't really know what it feels like to miss a day these days.
So I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Yesterday, you had a 12 and a half hour drive,
yeah.
Which, for the record, I don't even know how you're awake today after driving from New Jersey back to Georgia yesterday through the pouring rain. And so how do you get your runs in when you have a day like that?
Well, I got up early yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I actually ran in blue jeans yesterday morning before I went to go see my dad. I went to see him before I got on the road. So, yeah.
Like my Amish friend that won the 5K.
Yeah, that's right.
Blue jeans.
That's right.
No, yeah. Not suspenders, but
yeah,
blue
jeans. Yeah, no suspenders. But yeah.
So I mean, one mile.
And no, I ran 5K.
5K. Okay.
Yeah.
In blue jeans.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I try to run at least 10K a day,
mm-hmm.
but on a day like that, I'll settle for 5.
Nice.
So good day. Well, thanks for joining me again. It's always fun.
Likewise. Yeah. I'm honored to be here. And for those of you that don't know, Dean and I usually have a weekly run together.
That's right.
Where I am utterly blessed by this man's presence.
Oh, my goodness.
And conversations.
Vice versa. Vice versa, for sure. Yep. All right, everybody out there, keep it up. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Awesome.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.